This is the Bazook Briefing, the audio edition of the complete handover pack. Over the next half hour, we'll walk through the whole document, the market and what it's actually worth, the customer, the conditions on the ground in the UAE, the competitive landscape, the business model, the product specification, and the decisions that remain open. Every figure we cite is sourced and tagged in the written pack. Where the evidence is thin, we'll say so, because the pack itself does.
That last point is worth underlining before we start. This research was compiled with a discipline you don't often see at this stage. Every claim is tagged as sourced fact, shown method estimate, or registered assumption. There's a whole chapter on numbers that do not exist and figures that should never be used. So when we quote something in this episode, it has survived that filter.
Let's begin with the proposition itself.
Bazook.com is a consumer-to-consumer fashion resale marketplace built specifically for the UAE. Private individuals sell the clothes they already own. Buyers pay through the platform, card, Apple Pay, or installments, and the payment is held and only released to the seller once the buyer confirms the item arrived as described. Sellers pay no fees at all. On top of that, sit three signature services we'll come to in detail. A concierge service for people leaving the country, optional authentication on higher value items, and human-led dispute resolution with a named case owner. The one-line version. This is where the UAE buys and sells pre-loved fashion, with the money held safe until you say you're happy.
Now the market. Start global, because that's where the proof is.
Global secondhand fashion is roughly $257 billion a year, on the most recent industry data, heading toward $390 billion by 2030. That's around 9% annual growth, approximately three times faster than first-hand fashion. A major consultancy study late last year put resale at about 8% of total fashion and luxury sales today, rising to 10% by the end of the decade. And critically for our positioning later, in that same study, 80% of resale buyers named affordability as their reason for buying second-hand. Not sustainability, affordability.
And the proof that a marketplace can capture this profitably?
Europe supplies it.
The leading European peer-to-peer resale platform closed its last financial year at €10.8 billion of merchandise volume, up 47%, with €1.1 billion of revenue and its third consecutive profitable year. It reached that scale on remarkably little capital, roughly €130 million ever raised, and nothing since 2019. Its most recent valuation was €8 billion. Compare that with the authenticated luxury resale model. The best-known player there has raised over $700 million and has never been profitable in 15 years of operation. That's an order of magnitude difference in capital efficiency, and it settles the model question. Peer-to-peer with light-touch operations wins. Heavy mandatory authentication loses.
And the reason this matters for the Gulf?
Because the winning model has never arrived here. We verified this at the most concrete level available. The Category Leaders app is simply not distributed in the UAE or Saudi app stores. Not unpopular, absent. Zero search results for its app identifier. In 18 years of operation, it has expanded outside Europe exactly twice, both recently, and its own app store reviews show its execution quality drops sharply in new markets, a point we'll return to in the competitions section. No statement, no job posting, no trademark filing suggests Gulf intent. The best model in the industry is proven, profitable, and verifiably not coming here anytime soon.
So how big is the prize locally? And here the pack does something unusual. It opens by admitting what isn't known.
Correct. There is no official published figure for the UAE resale market, none from any credible research house. The best regional journalism says so explicitly, and then quotes two private estimates that differ from each other by a factor of 2.4. So, instead of borrowing a shaky number, the pack builds one bottom-up, method shown. The UAE apparel market is about $13.7 billion a year. Apply the global second-hand penetration rate of 8 to 9% of apparel spend, and you'd get $1.1 to $1.2 billion at global parity behavior. Assume Gulf adoption currently runs at roughly one-fifth of Western levels, a deliberately conservative haircut, and you land at approximately $250 million today. Two independent methods converge on that order of magnitude, and it sits just below the published conservative estimate, which is where an honest bottom-up number should sit.
And the behavioural evidence that Gulf consumers will actually do this?
The one genuinely credible regional survey, 1,300 GCC consumers run by the region's largest luxury retail group, found that 1 in 3 have already bought pre-loved, another third intend to, and 70% resold at least one item in the past year. Their motivations are financial. Make money. Fund the next purchase. 73% say they consider resale value before buying luxury in the first place. And the two barriers that stop them buying secondhand more often are authenticity concerns and condition concerns, both at 39%. Hold on to those two numbers because the entire product design flows from them. One caution, the pack flags. That survey's market size figures are dominated by hard luxury, watches and jewellery, so we use its behavioural data, not its market sizing.
Which brings us to demand. The strongest macro argument in the pack is the squeeze on household finances.
The numbers are stark. Average wages across the UAE rose 0.1% last year, effectively flat, while the workforce grew almost 15%, so that's headcount growth, not pay growth. Meanwhile, Dubai's consumer price index ran at 2.8%, and housing, over a third of the basket, rose nearly 4%. Residential rents were up 6 to 7%. Dubai added 208,000 residents in a year, against roughly 44,000 new homes, 470 new arrivals a day, chasing 150 new front doors. The behavioural consequence is measured. Nearly 44% of UAE consumers report trading down to cheaper brands, and in PwC's national survey, 49% named cost of living as the greatest threat facing the country, ahead of everything else.
So wardrobes become an asset class?
Precisely. For the seller, the wardrobe is idle capital. For the buyer, secondhand is the only way to keep the brands they like at prices that fit a flat salary. Both sides of the marketplace are fed by the same squeeze.
The second big development is political, and it's recent.
6 weeks before this pack was compiled, the UAE launched Naseej, the country's first integrated national textile circularity initiative, established under presidential directive and led from the presidential court with the Ministry of Economy and Tourism, the Emirates Foundation, and Tadweer. 14 corporate launch partners, including major retail groups and delivery platforms, and 5 pillars, one of which is explicitly policies and regulations, another behavioural research. The stated basis. The UAE generates 220,000 tonnes of textile waste a year, and 88% of it goes to landfill, with formal collection under 10%. Tadweer estimates around 500 million garments are consumed in the country each year, roughly 47 per person, American-level consumption.
And why does a policy initiative matter commercially?
3 reasons. First, grants and partnerships. A textile resale marketplace is close to a purpose-built answer to Naseej's mandate, and that opens funding and policy access routes that did not exist 18 months ago. Second, allies. 2 of Naseej's launch partners, a thrift charity that has rehomed over 200,000 donated items, and a clothing collection operator running 300 pickups a day, are natural supply partners for us. 1 conversation, 2 wins. Third, data. Naseej is expected to publish the first authoritative report on fashion circularity in the UAE later this year, which will hand this business its first official market data set.
Now, an honest wrinkle in the sustainability story.
Yes, and the pack refuses to gloss it. When you ask UAE consumers whether sustainability influences their purchases, 2/3 say yes, but the influence rises with age. 73% of over 45s report sustainability influence, against 61% of 18 to 24s. That is the reverse of the Western pattern. And national climate concern actually fell in the latest survey, while cost of living concern rose to the top. The strategic conclusion? Sustainability is real, but it's a supporting benefit and an institutional story. It is not what makes a Gulf consumer press the buy button. That tension shapes the positioning decision we'll come to.
One more attitude question, the stigma around secondhand.
Documented anecdotally, never measured. No survey has ever quantified secondhand stigma in the UAE, and the pack registers that as an explicit gap rather than inventing a number. The most useful framing came from a founder operating in this market who said the problem is friction, not apathy. Nobody here is attached to throwing clothes away. They simply haven't been given an option easier than the bin. Our entire product thesis is that option.
Let's do conditions on the ground. Infrastructure first.
Digital infrastructure is a solved problem. 99% internet penetration, mobile connections at twice the population, 100% mobile broadband coverage, median mobile download speeds around 600 megabits. E-commerce is about $8.8 billion, heading to nearly $14 billion by 2029. Nobody fails here for lack of connectivity.
Payments are more interesting.
Cards are near universal, 93% usage, but cash on delivery still accounts for roughly a quarter to 40% of e-commerce value, depending on whose figure you take. And the pack flags that disagreement openly rather than picking the convenient number. Here's the operational fact that matters. Cash on delivery orders return to origin at around 20% versus 6% for prepaid, and each failed delivery costs 25 to 50 dirhams. Courier data puts COD return rates at 12 to 13 times card-paid orders. That arithmetic has killed real companies in this market. So the launch decision is prepaid only, with cash on delivery visible in the interface but locked, alongside an honest explanation. You acknowledge the expectation, you don't absorb its cost. The bridge for trust-sensitive customers is installments. The leading buy-now-pay-later provider here has 15 million users and a $4.5 billion valuation, and 30% of millennial and Gen Z consumers use installments weekly. That rail is mature, native to our demographic, and it moves the trust question away from cash entirely.
Logistics. The pack calls this the hardest problem in the business.
Because it is.
The European resale model rests on infrastructure the Gulf doesn't have. 500,000 parcel pickup points and 10,000 lockers make a 15 euro order economic over there. The UAE has no consumer locker network at scale. That's a verified absence, not an assumption. So every order here is door to door, at 10 to 22 dirhams a parcel, depending on courier and weight. Next day within Dubai runs 17 to 30 dirhams. The consequences are structural. A minimum listing price of around 100 dirhams, because below that, the parcel eats the item. Bundle shipping as a core feature, not a nice to have. And a Dubai-first density strategy, because last-mile costs run 3 to 5% of basket in the urban core, but 15 to 25% in remote zones. One more constraint. UAE consumer protection law mandates a 7-day return window for e-commerce, and apparel returns run 26%. So, the European no-returns model is likely unavailable, and dispute handling becomes even more central.
Regulation. Any concept killers?
None found, with two open items that need counsel before real money moves. First, individual seller licensing. The UAE makes no clean statutory distinction between casual personal selling and commercial trading. Dubai's e-trader license is documented as nationals only, while Abu Dhabi's equivalent is open to all residents. Written confirmation from the Department of Economy and Tourism is required. Second, holding buyer funds. Holding money ourselves would make us a stored value facility, which requires central bank licensing and 15 million dirhams of paid-up capital. The standard, confirmed viable alternative is to authorize the card at purchase and capture and pay out on delivery confirmation through a licensed payment provider. Two gateways in the UAE offer marketplace split payment products, and confirming they'll pay out to unlicensed individuals is the single most important call to make before anything else. On the positive side, VAT is genuinely favorable, 5%, and as a disclosed agent, we'd charge it only on our commission, not the item value, materially better than Europe.
Now, the people. And this is where the pack does something most decks don't. It volunteers the number that shrinks its own market.
The UAE has 11.3 million people, growing at nearly 6% a year. Dubai alone added 208,000 residents in 12 months, its largest increase ever recorded. Median age, 31.5. 60% of Dubai is under 35. The population is roughly 87 to 89% expatriate. But the constraint? The country is 64% male. In Dubai's under-35 cohort, it's worse, 66%. Run the arithmetic and the core demographic for a female-led fashion marketplace. Women under 35 in Dubai is roughly 780,000 people. A female-skewed fashion resale market here has a national ceiling in the low single-digit millions, not 11 million. Headline population overstates the market by roughly three times, and the pack's view is simple. Better we say this to an investor than have them discover it.
And the churn, the coming and going that feeds the supply engine?
The evidence genuinely cuts both ways, so the pack presents both. In favour, Dubai issued over a million new residence permits in the first half of this year alone, against net population growth of about 200,000. Gross turnover is enormous relative to net change. Against, one brokerage reports average expat tenure has risen to over 10 years, and professional sector employee turnover here is actually below the global average. The honest synthesis. A settled minority coexists with a large transient majority. Both stories are true, and no single churn number should ever characterize this market. Not least because official departure statistics simply don't exist.
Worth pausing on that discipline, because it runs through the whole pack.
There's a chapter titled, What Does Not Exist? No UAE survey on second-hand clothing purchase incidents. No published market size. No stigma measurement. No platform GMV disclosures. No official salary data. No locker network data. And a do-not-use list of circulating figures the pack has debunked, including a $45 billion market estimate that's larger than the country's entire apparel market, and a population table that overcounts by 20%. If a number from this project ever gets challenged in a room, the answer is in that chapter.
Let's turn to competition. Global lessons first.
3. All settled by other people's money.
Lesson 1. Zero seller fees is now table stakes. Every major global platform has converged on the model where sellers list free and buyers pay a protection fee. The last holdouts conceded within the past 2 years, including the big authenticated player dropping its US commission and the managed consignment leader launching a peer-to-peer product. Nobody differentiates on fees anymore. Lesson 2. The exit market pays for logistics and distribution, not brand. The social resale darling of the last cycle was bought for $1.6 billion, grew its volume 65%, and was just resold for $1.2 billion. The multiple more than halved despite growth. Community is a discovery mechanic, not a moat. Lesson 3. Mandatory authentication cannot go mass market. The authenticated player employs over 100 people just to inspect items. The cost forces an $18 minimum listing price and 15 years of losses. The lesson we build on? Authentication must be optional, buyer paid, and above a value threshold. Never mandatory, never absorbed.
And the incumbents' weaknesses. The pack did original research here.
Primary research, reproducible. 4,650 recent App Store reviews of the European market leader, pulled across 10 countries, with all 719 one- and two-star reviews classified by theme. Three findings matter. First, execution degrades abroad. Its negative review rate in its newest market is 2.7 times worse than in its best-run one. Entering new markets well is precisely what it has proven bad at, and it's the one thing a local operator never has to learn. Second, the single biggest complaint category, at 21%, is wrongful automated bans, algorithmic moderation permanently suspending high-volume sellers with no human appeal. The platform's own anti-fraud automation is destroying its supply side. Third, unreachable customer support appears in nearly 4 in 10 negative reviews, and the buyer protection fee is widely described by users as protection that doesn't protect. A gap serious enough that a Berlin court and the European Commission have both intervened on how it's presented. And notably, fee complaints? 2.5%. The pain is trust and resolution, not price.
There's a regulatory dimension to that too.
A significant one.
European consumer protection law explicitly does not cover transactions between private individuals, and the platforms sit below the user threshold for the strictest digital services oversight. A senior EU official has confirmed on the record that consumer rules don't reach consumer-to-consumer deals. which means a platform that voluntarily adopts retail-grade guarantees, human review before bans, named case owners, honest fee presentation, converts a regulatory void into a marketing asset. That position is unoccupied anywhere in the world.
Now, the local field.
Start with the elephant, the dominant classifieds platform, newly listed at around a $2 billion valuation with 18 million monthly users. Its fashion category is free listings. No payments, no buyer protection, no delivery, cash between strangers in car parks. And that's a choice. Its profit engine is property and cars at 46% margins, and building payment infrastructure for 200 dirham dresses would dilute the economics it just took public. Its inaction is structural, which is what makes it durable. Then, the established luxury consignment player, 13 years old, around $32 million raised, and revenue flat at about $26 million. The managed model hits a ceiling. A boutique consigner publishes the only commission benchmark in the market. Sellers keep 80% and takes intake through a WhatsApp number, which tells you everything about the technical maturity here. And the new cohort. Four peer-to-peer resale apps launched in the past 18 months hold, between them, 22 App Store ratings. Two of them copied the identical fee model within weeks of each other, both unfunded. The pack reads that as proof the opportunity is obvious, and proof that nobody has solved it.
And the ghost every investor will raise, the startup that tried this a decade ago.
Raise it first, that's the pack's advice. A local startup pitched No Meetup Classifieds in 2014. Payments and delivery handled in-app. Exactly this thesis in spirit. It raised three rounds, pivoted to business liquidation by 2019 because its consumer economics never closed, was acquired, and its domain no longer resolves. The differences are substantive, not cosmetic. It was horizontal across all used goods rather than focused on fashion. It ran on cash on delivery, which we refuse. And it operated before installment payments existed here, before AI made listing nearly effortless, and before Naseej made circularity national policy. Same thesis, different decade, different rails.
Put the white space in one breath.
A locally operated, zero seller fee fashion marketplace that solves the three things the European model can't export. Payment trust without dense locker networks, door-to-door economics at a low basket size, and optional buyer-paid authentication, which no zero-fee marketplace anywhere offers, in the region whose luxury density demands it most. The wedge is trust execution, not price.
Which brings us to the one decision this handover deliberately leaves open, positioning. Two angles, both evidenced, presented with pros and cons, rather than pre-decided.
Angle one, cost of living, aimed at consumers. The case for it? It matches measured reality. Flat wages, rising rents, 44% trading down. And it's what converts, with 80% of resale buyers globally citing affordability. The case against? Affordability alone doesn't differentiate. Every marketplace claims cheap. It only becomes defensible paired with the trust mechanics. And the tone needs care in a market that prizes aspiration. This is smart shopping, not hardship. Angle two, sustainability, aimed at business and government. The case for it? Naseej makes it commercially real. Grants, policy access, official credibility, and two launch partners who happen to be our best supply allies. The case against? The consumer data says sustainability is not the purchase trigger here, and the demographic pattern inverts Western intuition. The synthesis the evidence leans toward, held open for the decision maker, is one product, two doors. Speak to consumers about their wallet, and to institutions about circularity. The open call is the waiting between them and how prominently the sustainability story features in the public brand.
Now the customer, in three faces.
The core user, 29, a marketing manager living in Dubai Marina, 6 years in the country, salary flat 2 years running, rent up 7%. Shops, the mid-market, and accessible luxury brands. Three bin bags of clothes she's been meaning to sell for 8 months, and she sells nothing, because classifieds means strangers messaging her personal number and meeting in mall car parks, and running an Instagram shop is a job she doesn't have time for. What converts her? A listing that takes 90 seconds, a courier that collects from her door, and never sharing her phone number. Her trust-critical moment is the first time she ships an item to a stranger before she's been paid, which is exactly what the held payment flow is designed to answer.
The supply engine.
34, British. 4 years in Dubai, relocating to Singapore in 5 weeks for her partner's job. A 40-kilo baggage allowance and a wardrobe worth perhaps 12,000 dirhams. Today, her options are abandon it, give it away, or spend evenings she doesn't have photographing 60 items. She is the reason the concierge service exists. One visit, one payout, before she flies. Her trust-critical moment is handing her wardrobe to a company she found last week, which is why the service includes price approval before anything goes live.
And the value buyer.
24. An Emirati student commuting from Sharjah. Buys secondhand for price and for finding pieces nobody else has. Shops modest fashion alongside mainstream brands. And modest fashion is a first-class category in this product with its own filters because every global platform ignores it. Her trust-critical moment is paying for something she can't touch from a person she can't verify, which is what condition grading, video proof, and the authentication tier answer.
The three signature features, then, each one traceable to evidence we've already covered.
1. Handover, the concierge liquidation service. Book a pickup. We photograph everything, draft the listings with AI assistance, price them with the seller's approval, and sell over 30 days. The seller is paid before they fly, and whatever doesn't sell is donated with a receipt. It converts the country's residence churn, that million permit half year, into a proprietary supply engine. No global player has this because no global market needs it. It solves the cold start problem, and it's the hardest thing in the pack to copy because it runs on vans, photographers, and relocation industry relationships, not on code. It carries a 15% commission that sellers pay gladly because we do all the work.
2.
Bazook Verified. Optional authentication on items above 500 dirhams. The buyer who wants certainty pays 75 to 150 dirhams. The item routes through our authenticator, gets a sealed tag and a certificate, and ships on. Remember the two 39% barriers, authenticity and condition, and the finding that 1 in 4 secondhand buyers in a comparable market unknowingly bought a counterfeit last year. Mandatory authentication bankrupts platforms. Optional, buyer-funded authentication turns the region's deepest trust concern into a revenue line. Nobody anywhere offers this on a zero seller fee marketplace.
3.
Real resolution.
Every dispute gets a named human case owner with a photo, a 48-hour response commitment, and a visible timer. No permanent ban is ever issued without human review, and there's an appeal path that actually works. This is aimed squarely at the incumbent playbook's two biggest failures, automated bans and unreachable support, and at that regulatory void we described. Nobody is required to offer retail-grade protection between individuals, so offering it voluntarily becomes the brand. Trust is cheap to promise and expensive to keep, and that's precisely what makes it a moat.
The business model.
3 revenue lines, which is the direct answer to the two local apps already at zero seller fees. First, the buyer protection fee, 6% plus 3 dirhams, undercutting both local entrants near the European benchmark blended rate with sellers at absolute zero. Second, verified, the authentication fee. Third, handovers 15%, which is a service commission, not a marketplace toll. The unit economic sketch, presented in the pack with error bars rather than false precision, a standard order at the assumed 220 dirham basket, contributes about 4 dirhams 70 after payment processing and a partial shipping subsidy, close to break even. A handover item contributes around 18.5 dirhams, a verified order around 64. The candid conclusion, stated on stage rather than buried, the signature services aren't garnish, they are what makes the model work. And the assumed basket size is flagged as the single number most likely to be wrong.
The cold start plan.
Supply first, Dubai only, 4 phases. Weeks 0 to 6. The concierge service done unscalably. 100 departing expats and closet clearers recruited through relocation firms, property managers, and school parent groups, targeting 3,000 listings before a single buyer is acquired. Weeks 4 to 10. Seed the tastemakers. Dubai's existing Instagram thrift sellers already have supply and audience, but no payment infrastructure. We give them a storefront, protected payments and shipping at zero seller fee. weeks 8 to 16. Partner supply through the collection operator, running 300 pickups a day, and the thrift charity, both, conveniently, Nasij launch partners. Weeks 12 onward. Demand, one district at a time, Marina, JLT, downtown. Because with no locker network, density beats reach. And the explicit not doing list. No Abu Dhabi or Saudi at launch. No cross-border. No menswear first. No sub-100 dirham fast fashion.
Defensibility. Four questions any investor will ask.
Why doesn't the classifieds giant just do this? Because it has deliberately chosen not to for a decade. Its 46% margins in property and autos would be diluted by building payment and delivery infrastructure for low-value fashion. And newly listed companies don't dilute their flagship margins in year one. Why won't the European leader arrive and crush us? It may, eventually, but it isn't distributed here today. Its model depends on locker density that doesn't exist, and its own reviews show it enters new markets badly. Our answer isn't that they'll never come. It's that we'll own local supply and trust before they do. And local supply is the one thing they can't buy. Why are we different from the startup that died trying? Focused where it was horizontal, prepaid where it was cash, and operating in a decade that has installments, AI listing, and national circularity policy. And what stops the two new apps copying us? Nothing stops them copying the fee, they already share it. They can't easily copy Handover because it's operations, partnerships, and vans. Between them, they have two ratings and no funding. What compounds over time is supply density, exclusive relocation partnerships, and a trust reputation that takes years to build.
The Honest Risk Register, ranked by impact times uncertainty.
1. Will UAE residents actually list their own clothes, photograph, price, ship? No study measures it. The failed predecessor failed exactly here, and it's the first thing the prototype must test. 20 seller interviews and a 100-person listing test with real payouts. 2. Will buyers pay a protection fee rather than transact free on classifieds or Instagram? To be A/B tested across the first 500 real transactions. 3. Do door-to-door economics close at this basket size? Courier rates are verified, basket mix isn't. Model against 200 real orders. 4. Is the departing expat engine as reachable as it looks? Pilot with two relocation firms, 50 bookings. 5. Is trust a revealed preference, not just a stated one? Price the authentication tier and measure attach rate. Plus the two council items, seller licensing, and payment provider payouts to individuals. Nothing found is a concept killer. All of it gates the go live.
And the product that carries all this into a demo.
A 12-screen prototype, every screen traceable to something we've discussed. No orphan features. The three signatures each get a dedicated surface. The concierge booking flow, the authentication explainer with in-checkout opt-in, and the dispute center with the named case owner and the 48-hour timer. The rest is the minimum viable marketplace. Feed, search with modest fashion filters, item detail with video condition proof and fee transparency, a 90-second AI-assisted listing flow, checkout with card, Apple Pay, and installments. Cash on delivery visible, but locked with an honest reason. Order tracking that shows your money is held until you confirm. Profiles and in-app messaging with no phone numbers ever. The design language is UAE real throughout. Dirhams everywhere, sizes in EU, UK, and US conventions together. Real district names, the brands UAE closets actually contain, and an English-first interface with an Arabic toggle demonstrated properly on one screen rather than machine-translated badly on all of them. Desktop and mobile are both first class. The landing page leads on desktop because the first impression for an investor or partner is a browser.
So let's close the way the pack does, the case, in five sentences.
The model is proven and profitable at global scale, and its owner has verifiably declined to bring it to the Gulf. The UAE has the squeeze that feeds both sides of a resale marketplace, a demographic engine that generates supply on every departure, and, as of 6 weeks ago, national policy actively looking for exactly this solution. The local field is structurally open, the giant won't dilute its margins, the luxury player has plateaued, and the new entrants have no traction and no funding. The wedge is trust, held payments, human resolution, optional authentication, which global evidence shows is the industry's deepest unmet pain and which no competitor anywhere occupies. And the plan starts narrow and honest. Dubai first. Supply first. Women 25 to 40 first. With the riskiest assumptions named and a prototype built to test them.
The written pack holds all 22 chapters, every source, every method, every registered assumption, and the one open decision on positioning, which is yours to weigh. That's the Bazook Briefing. Thanks for listening.